Welcome to Monday Morning Moments, a weekly podcast dedicated to helping you make the most of the moments in your life. I'm your host, Mike Van Hooser, and today I want to talk about how great leaders show up every day to lead, to make an influence, to serve, to transform lives, and talk about some practical things that they do, and maybe this will help you in your leadership journey every day and showing up as a leader at work, at home, and in your community. I love the quote from Nito Cubain, who says, "Your present circumstances don't determine where you can go. They merely determine where you start." And we use this quote a lot with athletes, with leaders in different organizations, because you know, there's a lot of things that can get us down. We sometimes judge our ceiling by our circumstances. But in this quote, it says, "Your present circumstances don't determine where you can go or how high you can go or what your potential is. They merely determine where you start." And we can't judge our ceiling by our circumstances, and we can't judge our potential and where we might be, what we might be able to achieve this year based on circumstances. It has to be based on progress and growth and other things. And as leaders, I think it's very important for us to help see that in our own lives as we lead ourselves and help others see that too. We also have an axiom in sports performance and sports psychology that says, "What you choose to focus on magnifies in size." When we use this, the best analogy or example I have is with golfers. A golf course designer gets you to focus on all the distractions that are on the course. They don't just open up the fairway big and wide and say, "Here's the hole, go shoot for it." They put sand in interesting places. They put water in interesting places. They put trees where you'll focus on them and not focus on the target. And if a golfer focuses on the sand trap, that sand trap becomes bigger and bigger in his or her mind and then can become as big as a beach in Florida based on how they focus on it by the time they're done with it versus focusing on the target. And I think it's important to understand it's not just what we focus on that magnifies in size, it's what we choose to focus on that magnifies in size. And we do have a choice in that, and it's very important as we think about the goals that we want to set for ourselves and the teams that we lead, that we have to focus on the goal and not the distractions. We need to be aware of obstacles and challenges and distractions, but once we've done that and recognize what those are, we have to get back to focusing on the goal and the right things. In talking about leadership, for me, it always begins with a couple of quotes. Dr. Deming, who was the father of the quality movement, had a quote that was very provocative, and it said, "Our prevailing system of management is killing our people." Now, that's a pretty drastic statement, but in a lot of organizations, I think their leadership style, the management style of people that they work with day in and day out and work for, sometimes is not maybe literally killing them, but figuratively, it's just a drain. It sucks the life out of them. And I think it's important to understand, am I engaging and bringing life to people? Am I unleashing their creative brain cells every day? Or am I sucking the life out of them? And what do I need to do in my leadership style to bring the best out of them? How can I impact the leadership culture that I'm a part of as well? That's a very important question to ask. And then another quote that has meant a lot to me over the years, and especially in the leadership development programs that we lead with a lot of teams and companies and universities and sports teams, comes from Peter Senge in his book, The Fifth Discipline, which is all about learning organizations. And Peter was the director of organizational behavior for MIT. And he said, "This is new work," talking about leadership. "This is new work for most experienced managers, many of whom rose to the top because of their decision-making and problem-solving skills, not their skills in mentoring, coaching, and helping others learn." And I think for a lot of leaders, they get to a point to where they're promoted based on how they produced and not necessarily in how they led others or how they grew others or the feedback that they gave them and how they coached them. And I think when you get to a point of leadership and now you're leading a team, you have to understand what your leadership style is and how to develop in those areas. And that's an area that we work in quite a bit and see that. But I think it's important to realize it's new work for a lot of leaders. You can't just promote somebody to a level of leadership and then expect them to perform in that and leading others and understanding how to give up control of task and be able to lead and produce through others when they've been able to only produce maybe through themselves. And that's the biggest thing I see as far as leaders and how they grow. There's been a lot of research that's been done by Gallup and others, and we've done research in the area of employee engagement. And I think, you know, for a lot of organizations, employees are coming into work and they're not fully engaged in what they're doing. In the research that we've seen from Gallup, they classify employee engagement in three categories. The first category is an engaged employee, and that's someone who works with passion and feels a profound connection to their company. They drive innovation and they move the organization forward, and they truly live out each day with passion and purpose. The second category, which is the middle category, is employees who are not engaged. So these are employees that are essentially checked out. They're sleepwalking through their workday, putting in time, but not much energy or passion into their work. We categorize this as being more transactional. They may be still doing okay or good work, but not great work, and it's more compliance than it is truly commitment. The third category that Gallup defines is in talking about employee engagement is those employees who are actively disengaged employees, and they aren't just unhappy at work, they're busy acting out on their unhappiness. And every day these workers undermine what their engaged coworkers accomplish. So they may be in some form or fashion actively working against the organization. The categories, it's interesting to look at the statistics because 70% of the research that Gallup does says that people are in either the not engaged or actively disengaged category. And it breaks down into about 52% of being not engaged and 18% being actively disengaged. So only 20 to 30% at any one time when they're conducting this research are actively engaged. And this cost in productivity, a lot of organizations, when you sum it up in total, about $450 to $550 billion in lost productivity. So it's very important as a leader to understand who your engaged employees are and how you can get, especially the ones that are not engaged in that middle category, more engaged. Maybe it's assigning the right assignment or understanding what their strengths are or understanding how to motivate them and activate them. Now, a lot of this is on the individual employee. They have to step up. It's definitely a two-way street, and it's not all on the leader, but the leader plays a part in that in understanding how can you recruit and develop and deploy and retain engaged and passionate employees. We have a model that is kind of this bridge of shared vision, mission, and purpose and values around leadership. And underneath the bridge, it's what we classify as transactional leadership. A lot of employees will go through the day and they'll earn a paycheck, and they're in that not engaged category. And you can still do good work in that, but nobody wants to live underneath the bridge. We all want to invite people on the bridge and to be more transformational in our relationships and how we lead and how we work every day. I think there are a couple of key things to getting people to build those transformational leadership roles and transformational relationships with people. And it begins with having a shared mission, vision, and values. For any great organization that we've worked with or studied, they have a mission statement that everybody knows. They have a shared vision that employees buy into, and it's a shared vision. It's not just the vision of the person at the top, but it's shared amongst the teams and employees that deploy that mission every day and execute on that strategy. And then they are really good at understanding what their core values are and what those leadership behaviors are that are tied to the core values. It's not enough just to define 5 to 7 core values and put them on a plaque and put them on the wall and say, let's live to those. But it's understanding in a shared way, what are those core values? What do they look like in practice? And how do I act those out every day? What are those leadership behaviors that I'm doing in serving customers and clients and really understanding what integrity means in my business or loyalty or mutual respect for customers, clients, and employees? Great organizations understand that. They also have clear roles and responsibilities. I think it's important to understand how we tie time to task and understand how that relates. Many organizations and studies that we've done, the employees who are serving people every day and working every day don't understand how their daily tasks fit into the ultimate mission of an organization. But for a great organization, they are clear about roles and responsibilities and how that ties into value. It's important as a leader to have clear expectations and targeted accountability. And when we're clear about giving expectations to others and what we expect, then we can target that accountability back to it and give feedback to employees around that as well. And then great transformational organizations also have operating principles with their employees across departments and across teams. And operating principles are basically just ways of operating effectively as a team. And it's asking a question, what do you need from me to be successful? And it's making a statement, here are the things that I need from you to be successful. And these can be very tactical things around time and communication habits and things like that, and when you want to meet and discuss things. But it also can be very strategic in giving feedback and understanding how my leadership style affects your performance and how it can enhance your performance. And all of these things lead to trust and alignment and commitment in organizations. So there are basically five things that I want to talk to you today about is that with that as a context of how great leaders show up every day and how you as a leader can embrace your role as a leader. And those five things are: great leaders lead the way, that's number one. They inspire a shared vision. They create positive change, which is number three. They activate the performance of others. And number five is they're truly resilient. So let's talk about those in just a few moments that we have on this podcast and talk about what those look like in practice. So the first one is leading the way. And this is really about self-leadership. It's about modeling the right example for other people. It's leading yourself effectively. In some of our workshops, we've shown a highlight of a video from some highlights from a game of Towson versus Kent State. It wasn't a widely televised game. I don't know if you were watching this a few years ago, unless you're from one of those universities, but they were playing football. And Kent State was punting the football, and Andre Parker was a linebacker on that team, and he had one job, and the one job was to cover the punt. And playing at the collegiate level, he had probably covered punts many years and knew what to do, knew which direction he was going, knew what his responsibilities were in punt coverage. And as Kent State punted the ball rolled down to about the 5 or 10 yard line, and the Towson player had hit off of his leg, and then it became a live football. And they were about 5 or 10 yards from the goal line from Kent State. And Andre Parker picked up the ball for Kent State, and now he had recovered a fumble. And instead of running into his own end zone, which was about 5 or 10 yards away, for some reason, he starts running the wrong way. And he runs 58 yards the wrong way until the Towson players tackle him. And in the video, it's interesting because as he makes that decision and makes that choice, the announcer says he becomes wrong way Parker. And not only is he confused, but the choice that he makes confuses his teammates because they start blocking for him. And I guess they were saying that, well, I guess we were going this way. I thought we were, but he must know what he's doing. So let's follow him and follow his example. So we'll start blocking for him. And not only does it confuse his 10 other teammates, he also confuses the 11 players on the Towson side because they start chasing him. And they tackle him at the end of the video, and they knock him down, and they're like, yeah, we knocked him down. We stopped him. And their coach comes running down the sidelines and is pointing and shouting. And I don't know exactly what he's saying, but I think he's saying something about, hey, he was going the wrong way, and if you let him keep going, we would have had a safety. And one person's choice affected 21 other players on the field that day. And I think it's important to understand from a leadership perspective that the daily choices and decisions that you make as a leader impact others. And they impact others at work. They impact others at home. They impact others in your community as well. And we have to understand how not only the things that we say, but the things that we do impact and affect others. Having five boys and being married and having a wife, I have people watching me all day long. And in my home, that's where it means the most to me, in addition to the other areas that we talk about in life. And as I've grown, I've seen how my boys have watched me, not only in what I say, but in what I do. And I have to set the right example in doing that. And as you think about the roles that you have, I think it's important to understand, how are you leading the way? And do your words match up with your actions? And making sure that we're setting the right example in all areas of life. And it's very important as a leader that we do that. In leading the way for others, I think when we've studied great teams, here's just some things to think about in creating a great team. Great teams, they know and are enthusiastic about the mission. We already talked about how mission statement is very important, but great teams seem to just know and they're passionate and enthusiastic about their mission. They're able to connect their daily roles and responsibilities to the mission, so they understand what they do and how that contributes to the ultimate mission of the organization. And leaders help lead the way for that. Also, great teams collaborate and enjoy working with their teammates. They have fun. They have fun working together and bringing their skills together and making sure that the sum of the parts is better than just their individual talents. They also are creative problem solvers and possibility thinkers. And when you lead the way in the right way and understand that innovation is what you're about, creative thinking and problem solving is what you're about, then you can help others be creative problem solvers and possibility thinkers in their approach to everyday work. And then great teams, finally, are committed to the success and impact of the mission, vision, and core values of the organization. They understand that what they do impacts other people, and that begins with leadership. And when you truly understand as a leader what you do every day and how that impacts other people, it can really inspire you to live life purposefully and intentionally and with passion and purpose. So let's talk about the second way that great leaders show up. It's inspiring a shared vision. That's relates to communication. And we have to make sure that we understand the needs and the wants and the desires and also the way that people want to leverage their strengths and make an impact. I think everybody wants to show up and make an impact. But we have to make sure that we understand what that is and how we connect roles and vision of what we're trying to do as an organization, as a team, even as a leader with other people, so that we inspire that shared vision for them. And hopefully that connects with something within them to motivate them to do that, to connect to the mission and vision that we're trying to accomplish. I love what John Maxwell says in his book, Everyone Communicates, But Few Connect. If you think about it, we have so many ways to communicate with each other through technology and email and texting and social media and all of these ways that we can communicate. And every day, new technologies coming out to help people communicate. But in his book, he says, there are a lot of people, or everyone, as he says, communicates, but few truly connect. And truly connect with others, that will inspire a shared vision, because you have to connect with the people that you're leading to inspire that shared vision. And here's a couple of things that you need to think about as a leader on connecting with others. The first thing is connecting your team to the mission, vision, and core values. Something that's a recurring theme I know on this podcast so far, but we have to understand the why and where we're going and the what's important to truly execute on the mission and vision and core values of our organization. And every day, being able to tell stories and relate how they're doing and what they're doing and what they're doing well, how that can ultimately contributes to impact. And that's what a great organization is all about. Their mission, vision, and core values are going to tie to the impact that they're going to make, both from a financial standpoint and an impact in lives and customers in an industry. And being able to connect that is really important. But being able to connect those dots, that's a leader's role. Another way that we can connect is connect with our people. Understand, what are they motivated by? What are they involved in outside of work? What are they passionate about? You learn a lot, I think, by understanding people's hobbies and interests and maybe even outside activities and being able to tap into that. I've found that in conversations I've had with team members I've had, I understand their drive and determination by what they do outside of work. Do you know some of those things? And if somebody's an Ironman triathlete, they have to have discipline and determination to be able to put in the training to do that. Well, how can you tap into that at work and see how that relates to certain things and assignments and projects that you give them? But connecting with your people is really important. I think also as a leader, it's not just asking questions, but it's being vulnerable and sharing about yourself and understanding that, because the more they know you, the more they'll connect with your story and your journey as well. Connecting the team to each other is another way that leaders can connect. And I think it's important to not only have the one-on-one relationships, but create environments where they can connect with each other. And that can be through retreats, it can be through team meetings, it can be other things that you do as a leader. I think it's important that we use meeting time not just for status reports and others. People have enough of that going on and they can read a document. But how do you create environments where people can contribute to solutions and connect with each other and work more collaboratively together as well? And that's all in the way a leader creates environments for people to connect with each other. And then connecting your team to the results. It's important to see the progress they've made and to remind them about that. A lot of times with teams I've coached, and this could be even in sports, they don't see the progress they're making because they are not having somebody point that out to them. They focus on mistakes. They focus on maybe things they didn't do well. And I think it's important to help them understand what are the results we're achieving and what is the progress that we're making as well. Towards the goals and towards, you know, just growth, and connecting our team to that is important. So in inspiring a shared vision, yes, communicating that well is important, but I think connecting with your people so that they receive it, they understand it, and they incorporate that into their everyday lives. The third way that leaders truly show up and embrace their role as a leader is creating positive change. It's being the change that they want to see. It's understanding that, you know, I have a role in creating positive impact and positive change, and I want to advance the ball myself and through my team in that area. Anybody can create some change, but we want to make sure that it has a positive impact on the industry that we're in, the team that we're leading, and making sure that we're doing that. And there are four ways that I think leaders show or can create positive change. The first one is challenging the process. And what I mean by that is not just creating change for change's sake, but asking the question, why do we do it that way? A lot of times people will ask that, and the answer is, well, I don't know, that's the way we've always done it. But that's not a good enough answer. I think you have to understand the why around processes and systems and things that you do every day, not only as yourself, but also your team, your organization. When you can ask that question and then kind of peel that back and understand what are some things that we could do better in that area, you can really get to some innovative solutions and create positive change and really challenge the status quo of how things have been done in the past. Now, again, you don't want to be changing this every 6 months or every year, because then you're never giving it time to realize the impact of a certain change. I see a lot of organizations that just change all the time, and people get numb to that, and then they're just like, this too shall pass, and they don't embrace the change. So it's important to have engaged people in that process and help them understand, you know, why you're creating the change or why you're doing something differently. And if something's working well, continue to leverage that. But challenging the process is always a good exercise to understand why you do something, and then maybe create positive change out of that. The second way, and it's related to that, is asking the right questions. So making sure that you develop really good questions and ask the right questions to get to core issues to then get to solving problems. The third way that leaders create positive change is by conquering limiting beliefs. And I see limiting beliefs pervasive in sports, in business, and in life. And what it looks like is that people box themselves in. They have limiting beliefs, and a limiting belief is just a belief that limits you from maximizing your potential or achieving your goals. And it's a way of thinking. It's saying, well, I'm only good at this, or I never do this. I had a baseball player who played for the Astros when we did some work with the Astros several years ago that would say, well, I always have a bad April. And I knew it was a coping mechanism for him. I knew what he was saying is it's a long season. There are 162 games. It's 4, 5, 6 months. And so I know that if I have a bad April, it'll be okay because I can get better over the months. But my first thought was, well, is that where we have to start? Do we have to start with you're already, you know, just signing off on a whole month and just saying it's just going to be a bad April? One, I'd have a belief that says, well, I've had bad Aprils in the past, but I'm going to make sure I try to engage in this and make it a better April and a better start to the season. So that can be a belief. It's just that negative mindset that boxes us in. I've also seen limiting beliefs where a strength becomes a weakness. And for a leader, this is very, very important because a leader can say, well, if you want something done right, you just have to do it yourself. And they never trust and coach and develop their people because they always rein in those tasks. And they never create future leaders or create capacity for themselves and for their people and for their organization because of a limiting belief that they hold on to that, you know, they're the only ones who can do that. I've also seen this in sports where maybe a player on a basketball team says, well, I've got to score all the points tonight because we're not going to win if I don't do that. And they start pressing and they start doing things that are not natural and forcing the game versus finding a flow for the game and playing as a team. And I think, again, that's really important to understand that that limiting belief, that strength becomes a weakness in that situation. And then the fourth way that leaders create positive change is being a part of the solution and not the problem. Don't be a person as a leader who just says, well, that's wrong, and that's wrong, and that's wrong. And there's some people who think that there's a reward just for picking out all these wrong things or all the things that are going wrong versus saying, well, yeah, that's an issue or that's a challenge or, yeah, that's not going well right now, but here's my solution to that. Here's what I think is possible in that. Being a part of the solution will always create value in organizations for you and for your team and for the ultimate organization you're leading if you're a part of that solution versus just contributing to the problem. And also, I think part of that statement of being a part of the solution and not the problem is being self-aware. If you're not, as a leader, delegating tasks and giving up responsibility in the right way to people who can handle that responsibility, then in that moment, you may be a part of the problem. And you have to look at yourself and say, how am I contributing to that problem? And how can I be a part of the solution? And sometimes it's getting out of the way and facilitating growth for other people. The fourth way that great leaders show up and embrace their role as a leader is activating the performance of others. And this is one of my favorite habits out of our Invisible Hand of Leadership workshop that we do with a lot of organizations. And the best example, it goes with the activator role that we have in these seven roles of leadership. And the best example I have of that is a point guard in basketball. I played the point guard position. And I have a lot of admiration and respect for point guards and the coaches the teams I coach with my boys. You know, we've developed a lot of point guards, and that basically is my coach on the floor. And the role of a point guard is very important because they have the basketball, and they can make a determination if they dribble and shoot or if they pass to other people. And they're responsible for activating that performance of other people. And they have to make decisions and quick decisions in certain moments. Do I shoot? Do I drive? Do I pass? And play team basketball and basically lead themselves and lead through other people. And that's the core example of what an activator is and how you activate the performance of others. In certain situations, you're going to have to lead out and you're going to have to do those things and people are going to need to follow you and come alongside you and contribute, and you're going to have to produce. But there are other moments where you're going to have to discern, how do I produce through other people? And how can I give people the right responsibility and the right authority to activate the performance of them? How can I teach them and develop them and lead in and through them? And when you do that, you create so much capacity and margin for yourself. You create other leaders that take on additional responsibility down the road, and it frees up capacity for them and for the organization as well. And ultimately, we're talking about exponential leadership, not just additional leadership. When you manage the task of other people, it's more like addition. When you're a transformational leader and you can truly activate the performance of other people and activate through other people, we're talking about exponential leadership because you develop other leaders who then develop other leaders, and it's an exponential result that you have. In thinking about that, there are five steps to delegation that we've used in coaching and used in our Invisible Hand of Leadership workshop that I just wanted to offer up to help you in this area of activation and activating the performance of others. In this five steps to delegation, the first one is desired outcomes and results. So basically, this is communicating when you're delegating a task, what are we trying to accomplish? What are the desired outcomes and results? What needs to be achieved? A lot of times I'll see leaders assign a task and it's, hey, I need you to go call this person. Or they just jump right into the middle of the task versus helping somebody understand what are we trying to accomplish. And when people have context, they go out and are able to perform better because they'll take ownership of that. The less context they have for what's trying to be achieved or accomplished, the less they'll know and really own and understand how their role fits into what you're trying to accomplish. So making sure that you understand when you're delegating something, communicate the desired outcomes. The second one is guidelines. So in five steps of delegation, the second step is guidelines and giving them direction to complete the task. And as a leader, you need to understand their experience level in this area. So if they're less experienced and you're more experienced, then you're going to need to give a little bit more direction to complete the task. And maybe it's going through some steps. Here's what I would do. Here's who I'd call. Here's the process, you know, that you want them to follow. If they're more experienced in that area, it's just some general guidelines and you're less specific, relying on them to develop what those guidelines would be, but making sure that they're tied into, you know, the outcome that you want to achieve. The third step to delegation is letting them know about available resources that are available to accomplish the task. Don't assume that they know they should call a certain person or that somebody else in another area has done that before. If you have that information, share that with them. You're not doing that task for them, but you're short-circuiting the process. You're fast-tracking the process to allow them to say, hey, you may want to check with so-and-so in that area because I think they've done this before. And then they go off and do that. But make sure they understand what the available resources are. This could be also budget, you know, making sure you communicate, here's the budget we have to accomplish this. Because sometimes people will make assumptions about whether they have all the budget in the world or no budget, and you need to make sure they understand, you know, that sponsorship is a key piece of that too. Making sure they understand this is a top priority and we have sponsorship, you know, throughout our organization for this initiative. The fourth step to delegation is accountability. So making sure they understand the level of responsibility and authority that is being given. For instance, if you were having them research a vendor to do a certain thing and they thought that, you know, their responsibility authority was to go out and research 10 vendors, limit it or narrow it down to a top three, and then sign an agreement, and you were just thinking, well, just research it, develop the top three, and then check back with me so we can make a decision and I'll make, you know, the ultimate decision and sign the contract. That's a really important thing to clarify on the front end as far as the accountability, which is really the level of responsibility and authority that they have. And related to both guidelines and accountability, I think it's important also to communicate how often you want them to check in. Again, that's something that's often forgotten. We just assume that, well, surely they know this is a priority and surely they'll get back to me and by Friday and understand that I want them to check in on a regular basis. I think it's important to outline that and as an operating principle and tell them, I'm going to give you a week to research this, and then let's have a meeting, set it up next Tuesday where we can talk about progress and where you are. It basically just reduces a lot of frustration on the back end. And then the fifth step to delegation is the consequences or implications or impact. And it's communicating that to them. The consequences of not achieving the outcome are the impact if the opportunity is seized. I like to think more in terms of implications and impact. If we're able to achieve this and communicating that, if we're able to accomplish this, this is what's possible. And I think when you do that, it gives them, again, a little bit more inspiration and opportunity to take ownership to really say, I really want to help achieve that outcome, and this will be the impact of that outcome and how what I do in this moment impacts that. We talked about operating principles earlier, but I think that's very important, again, in activating the performance of others. And again, basically, it just establishes principles and a framework for working effectively and productively with each other. And it includes both the strategic and tactical methods for effective teamwork and originate from a question and a statement. And the question, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, is what do you need for me to be successful? So as a leader, being vulnerable and saying, what do you need for me to be successful? And it opens up an opportunity for them to talk about things like, well, I need feedback, or I'd like to meet on a regular basis, or I'd like to know more about a certain area. And they can start to talk about how what their working style is like. And again, they don't rely just on assumptions around that. And then it opens up an opportunity for you to say, here's what I need from you to be successful, and to communicate some of those things as well, and creates a great working relationship. And I've seen this both in one-on-one situations, but also across teams in certain companies and organizations. And again, this can help, if you facilitate it in the right way, to help departments work more closely together and more effectively together based on certain things they may be assuming about each other. So it's really important to define what those operating principles are. And it's much better done on the front end than in the heat of an issue. The fifth thing and final thing I wanted to talk about is how leaders show up in being resilient. They basically focus on possibility thinking. And in the studies we've done on resiliency and grit in sports and business and life and perseverance and those kinds of qualities, is that resilient people get into possibility thinking very early. A problem occurs, a setback, a challenge, and they say, yeah, that's a problem. But what's possible in this moment? What can we do to overcome that challenge? Where can we redirect our attention to really accomplish the goal? Non-resilient people get to a downward spiral where they say, that's a problem, and what are we going to do? And man, that's a big challenge, and we can't get past that. And it just becomes this downward spiral. And before you know it, you've got a bunch of Eeyores like Winnie the Pooh that are just saying, it's probably going to rain today, and everything's falling apart. And nobody wants to work with a lot of Eeyores. You want to work with people that are more like Yoda, that say do or do not. There is no try. And they're focused on, pushing forward and seeing what's possible and pushing past the obstacles that are there. And I think that's very important when we think about, life, when we think about leadership. We have to be resilient, and we have to rely on our strengths and be able to leverage those strengths as well. There was a Wall Street Journal article that was talking about the ups and downs of cycling technique, and it was written by Jesse Moore, or the quote was from Jesse Moore. It was written by Jen Murphy, and this quote I loved. It said, in cycling, you repeatedly scan the road surface in front of you for challenges, but the eyes always need to be locked on where you want to go. Focusing on obstacles in your path is a sure way to hit one of them. And I think I've seen that a lot when I'm out riding my bike on a Saturday or something with a group, and they'll point out, there are rocks over here, or watch out for this hole here. And you have to be able to see those and scanning the surface for those. But if you constantly focus on those obstacles, they're going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's what you choose to focus on versus avoiding them and focusing on the path that you want to take, not only in cycling, but also in life as well. As a leader, it's very important to be an engaged leader, to show up in the ways that we've talked about, and to really understand that we have a role in leadership. It's very important, and we need to do these five things. We need to lead the way. We need to inspire a shared vision. We need to create positive change. We need to activate the performance of others and create that capacity for us, for them, and the organization. And we need to be resilient in that process. Just to close out this podcast, I wanted to share with you a quote by Larry Bossidy that I love. Larry was former executive at GE. He also was at Honeywell and Allied Signal. And he said, "I'm convinced that nothing we do is more important than hiring and developing people. At the end of the day, you bet on people, not on strategies. So your role as a leader in developing people is really important. It's great to have a great strategy, and it's very important to have a great strategy. But at the end of the day, in executing that strategy, you're relying on people, not on the strategy, to carry that out. And it starts with you as a leader, and it is shown in the changed lives of others that you lead and develop over time."